Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is Episode 40, Tax Reform Two-Step.
And welcome back to Season 3 of Color Country Politics. We're thrilled to have you here. I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And for our first episode of Season 3, we are so, so excited to have Senate Majority Leader Evan Vickers here with us.
Yay! Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
So, I'm sure that everybody has heard about tax reform, and it's quite the topic of conversation. We wanted Senator Vickers to come on and just kind of talk about the ins and outs and the history and the pros and the cons and the facts and some of the fiction that is out there. So thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Yeah. Well, that's my pitchfork at home.
That's good.
This is a safe space.
Okay. So, there you go. Well, this is good because there's information needs to be accurate. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of inaccurate information out there. And hey, tax law is confusing by nature.
Yeah.
And it's just very, very complicated. And so I can understand why people are confused. And then quite frankly, you know, the way the session went last year with the tax reform bill, it confused people. And so it's continued to confuse people throughout. But now that the bill has passed and, you know, it passed significantly in both the House and the Senate, and now we need to, and there are people that are looking at a referendum, I think we need to clear up some things and make sure, I want people to know exactly what the bill does and what mm-hmm. it doesn't do, mm-hmm. so that then they can make their own choice.
Perfect. That's why we asked you on.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Should we start with kind of a little history? Like how did we get here? Why is this even a conversation?
Let me give you kind of a quick synopsis. So the issue isn't money in the state of Utah. We've got a thriving economy. We're actually pretty robust, and we're seeing increases in income tax significantly. We're also have seen some increases in sales tax revenue, but not as much as an income tax. So in the state of Utah, we have a constitutional amendment that designates that all income tax goes to education. Now, we did pass an amendment to that, and the people passed this, another constitutional amendment, that part of that can go to higher education. So we do have that. So essentially education, income tax money goes to education. Sales tax money funds everything else. And so Medicaid, transportation, law enforcement, all those kind of things, anything you can think of that's not attached to education comes out of sales tax mm-hmm. or gas tax.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that was the challenge we've had, is that we haven't had as much growth in those areas.
Right.
So we really kind of needed to redistribute. And so we have some flexibility on the income tax side, so we wanted to give some significant cuts on the income tax side, but we do need to bolster the sales tax side. And that's where this process all started. Now, HB 441, which will go down in history, is possibly the worst bill we've ever tried to pass in the legislature.
Equally hated by everybody.
That's right.
Well, aside from maybe the Graham bill a few years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and SB 54.
Yeah.
I mean, we could go on.
441's right up there.
Oh, yes,
yes.
It's definitely in the top three.
There you go. So,
and that bill was proposing to change the structure of how we do taxing in the state of Utah, and significant changes. And what they were proposing in that bill was to start taxing services. So, for example, the sales tax portion that we have to charge sales tax on has started to decrease just by the nature of the economy and how things have gone. We stream a lot of things now. Mm-hmm. We buy more services than we do product, you know, those kind of things. So we're looking at taxing everything. You know, real estate, attorneys, you name it. It was on the list. That's when you say made everybody mad. It was very successful in that because it really did tick off everybody.
Good.
Yeah,
okay. I'm happy to do
everybody's
my part.
Attention.
Yeah, you know? Happy to do my part.
The idea was is to reduce the rate. You know,
uh-huh.
you know, the current sales tax rate for the state is 4.85 and wanted to reduce that down. So that was the premise of that bill, to move money over to the sales tax side, not necessarily raise more revenue, but redistribute. And then give some significant cuts on the income tax side. Mm-hmm. It was messy. It was very complicated and, quite frankly, too energetic. And that bill did not pass.
Yeah.
No, quite frankly, the public has never forgot that.
Right.
Yeah.
They've never been able to kind of disassociate from that bill and
uh-huh.
move on. And I can understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the legislature set up a task force that went around the state. They had 8 or 9 public meetings throughout the state, and all throughout the summer. Had long meetings in Salt Lake, and lots and lots of public input in determining what we would do. Mm-hmm. And eventually, the product was the bill we passed in special session, a few weeks ago.
Let me ask you 2 questions about that. The first is, because I keep hearing that state tour that the task force went on was a waste of time. They never intended to, hear what the voters had to say. It was just all a show. Did they really take some of that input from those meetings that happened around the state?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Some of the messages were, one of the prominent senators who was on the committee said, the message was, don't tax me or tax the guy behind the tree.
Right.
Yeah. Tax everybody else, but don't tax me.
Uh-huh.
But the fact of the matter is, some of the messages were, don't tax services.
Right.
At least don't tax these major services were being proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Protect education.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things, and be fair to the working poor and the poor
mm-hmm.
in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
Those were messages that were very prominent, and they were heard. And quite frankly, as this process went on, there were significant changes made in the policy and in the bill that directly came from the product of those task force meetings.
Okay. I thank you for that. My second question is, you brought up the fact that this was a special session
mm-hmm.
that was just a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I have also heard, the criticism, is the legislature did this under cover of darkness during the holiday season when nobody was paying attention, just so they could be sneaky and get it through. So why did that special session happen, and why did it happen at the time that it did?
Good question. Let me explain. So after hundreds of hours of public meeting and public testimony, far more than we'd have on any bill during a legislative
yeah.
session, it was deemed that there's some things, but there's some important points in the bill that really needed to happen before the first of the year. Okay, so there's $60 million one time that's going back to individuals and families that qualified for dependent exemptions, but was taken away because of the Trump tax law.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So back in 2018 tax law, those families were hurt.
Uh-huh.
So in this bill, we've raised that exemption from $560 per person to $2,500.
Wow.
But in order to give that money back, that 2018 money back, we needed to do it for the first of the year, because we want those checks. They're actually retroactive.
Okay.
These checks are going back, but we needed to do it before the first of the year, so those checks could go to those families in the first part of the year. $60 million one time is a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's going back to families across the state of Utah, but it has to do with the 2018 tax year. It doesn't even have to do with this. And the other factor is we wanted, at the start of the first of the year, we wanted the tax tables to reflect these reductions, so people could start to see more income coming into their paychecks
mm-hmm.
right from the very start. Even though, for example, the sales tax on food doesn't take effect until April,
uh-huh.
The gas tax doesn't take effect until April, those things, we wanted that to start up front.
Uh-huh.
And so in order to do that, that was one thing. That was the major driving issue. Now, also, if we were to do this in the regular session, it would consume the whole
right.
atmosphere, and we
yeah.
wouldn't get anything else
yeah.
done.
Easily.
There's an awful lot of other very, very important issues that need to be addressed. So we felt like, we always felt like if we can get it right and what we feel is right and doing the right thing for the state of Utah and for the people in the state
mm-hmm.
of Utah, then we need to do it earlier than the first of the year.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that hopefully will help people understand, sort of the whys and the wherefores of the decision-making that went into doing it that way. Because I don't know if people really get all of the minutia that goes into, the legislative session and the budgeting and,
mm-hmm.
and all of that kind of stuff that happens. And you really have to have your tax structure figured out before you can even go in and
right.
start with the budgeting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of took us off on a tangent there. We were back talking about there was a special session and it was passed. So please continue with your narrative.
Sure. So coming out of the special session, let's qualify something too. So the bill passed in the special session.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a bill passes with 2/3 majority, a constitutional 2/3 majority in both houses, so in the Senate, for example, that's 20 votes out of
mm-hmm.
29. If it passes with a constitutional 2/3, then you're not able to do a referendum on the bill. So the only time the referendum has actually been successful in the state of Utah was during the, when they did the voucher bill, mm-hmm. and back mm-hmm. in 2008, mm-hmm. and that went on the, and the, or maybe it was 2009. No, it was 2008. So it went on the ballot, and that was the only time that ever has been successful. It's a pretty high benchmark. So in the Senate, we did have a two-thirds constitutional majority. Actually, if you look at it, on the first reading, it was 20 votes. Mm-hmm. On the second reading, it was 19. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is one of our senators was very, very ill.
Oh,
and he went home, he went back to the hotel, but he was prepared to get off his sick bed, come up and vote if he needed to have that two-thirds. The House had some people that were absent, but 61% of the House members that were present voted for the bill. Mm-hmm. Now, I've actually seen, and it's been criticized, well, two-thirds of the people didn't, two-thirds of the legislature didn't even vote for this bill, and it barely passed. Well, I'm sorry, but it more than barely passed. It passed with a significant number, and quite frankly, if we'd had everybody there, there would have been a two-thirds.
Okay.
So that opens the door for the referendum, mm-hmm. just to clarify.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you want to get into what the bill does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk
let's
about
start
it.
There.
So let me go through and talk about what the bill does. And maybe in the process, I'll point out some of the inaccuracies that are going on in the public. And,
perfect.
And look, I don't blame anybody. This is a complicated issue. And so trying to understand that, I even listened to some of the programs on TV. In fact, I was listening to one yesterday on TV and had the minority leader from the House. He didn't even understand the bill. As I was, he was relating it to the announcer, the interviewer. I could tell that he didn't even fully understand what the bill did.
Oh, dear.
So okay. For the public to fully understand, I realize that's a complicated
yeah.
thing.
Well, the summary itself is 5 pages, and that's...
Actually, 7.
Man.
So...
I mean, just to have an abstract that long,
yeah.
I mean, never mind what's in the bill itself.
Right.
So the thing that people need to understand is the largest tax cut we've ever done in the state of Utah.
Wait, I'm sorry. I thought you said it was a tax cut.
It was.
So
the largest
tax cut
that
okay.
has ever been done in the state of Utah.
Okay.
A total of $240 million.
Wow.
You know, $60 million of that, $70 million of that is one time, the rest of it's ongoing.
Okay. Wow.
That's a net tax cut. Now, yes, there's shift here and there, raises here and lowers here, but
mm-hmm.
the next net effect is a significant tax cut, putting money in people's pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that. So and you may or may not have seen this little scatter chart that's out there, this is part of the summary. And if anybody wants to look at this and dig into these summaries, there's two things that I would recommend you do. Look at the state website, you know, le.utah.gov. Look for tax restructuring or tax reform, and it'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the Utah Senate webpage. It'll be there. The other one is to look at the Utah Taxpayers Association. It was a very conservative group in the state of Utah. I've been a watchdog on taxes for years and years and years in the state of Utah. They put together a very, very good summary of what the bill does. They're very supportive of that. The Bankers Association, the Realtors,
mm-hmm.
There's cultural organizations, and a number of other organizations that really have come forward and said, you know, this is really a good thing. We've evaluated this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good thing. But this scatter chart indicates, what that indicates is everybody in the state of Utah is going to have more money in their pocket after this bill.
Wow.
Now, a criticism of this scatter chart that I've heard from some, which is not accurate, is that it does not take into consideration the expenditures for sales tax on food and gasoline. That is not accurate. This chart was put together using data from the federal government and the state government to take into consideration what those estimated payments would be. So this is a net tax reduction in everybody's pocket. So that's at the end of the day, that's what you get. You get more money in your pocket.
Wow. Okay.
In the summary, there's some specific things that point out to the exact line in the bill. You know,
okay.
if you're a real nerd and want to look at a 288-page bill, and by the way, the bill is 288 pages, but every tax bill in the state of Utah is going to be lengthy because when you do a bill, you have to print the whole section of code.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't mean there's 288 pages of change.
Right.
You know, there might be 20 or 30 pages. Sometimes there's only a few lines that are changed. But what you look for, if you're looking at the bill, look for things that are underlined, which means that's new, or if it's crossed out. That means the state came out. So those are the things you look for. If you happen to be a nerd and want to read the bill and look at it, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So policy descriptions. Okay, so the first thing it did is reduce the state income tax rate. Now, we were at a flat rate of 5%. We reduced that a year or so ago to 4.95. This reduces it to 4.66.
Okay.
So that's a significant reduction. Also, that will add to the idea that Utah is a well-managed state. We will start to see more economic development because of that reduction in the income tax.
Yeah. I'm going to take us on just a short other little tangent, because one of the things that I think gets missed in these conversations is the big picture of how well the state of Utah is doing. We are consistently the best managed state, the most business friendly state. I mean, by so many different metrics, the state of Utah is really the top state in the country for economic growth, being business friendly, and quality of life, and all these kinds of things. So I just want to make that point, that if you step back a little bit, that this is a healthy debate to have, and it's great that so many people are paying attention. But at the end of the day, this is really a well-managed state, and it's a great place to do business and to live and work.
And there was a study that came out recently that showed that we have the lowest tax burden in 25 years, not because we're slashing left and right, but because incomes are growing so well.
Right. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
yeah,
okay.
We've been fortunate. You know. Another big policy discussion was the Utah dependent exemption. So, mm-hmm. for example, the Trump tax law essentially did away with a lot of that. Larger families really got hurt, and they ended up paying more money in that 2018 tax year. So we actually increased the exemption for 2019, but 2018, but not to the full level. This bill does two things. It gives $60 million one time to go back and reimburse those families. And then also it changes the exemption going forward from $565 to $2,500 a piece. And it allows joint filers with no additional exemptions to have one additional exemption.
That's $60 million, is that being distributed statewide, or is there income thresholds for that?
It'll be distributed. No, there are some phase outs on it, but primarily all of those families that should have qualified for that exemption back in 2018 will be getting a check in the mail.
Wow.
In the first part of the 2020.
Okay. Yeah. That's amazing. Watch your mailboxes for that.
Yeah, no kidding. And then, so Social Security income.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of clamor for a number of years. Now, Utah is one of 13 states that still has some income tax on Social Security income. Mm-hmm. This essentially phases that out.
Okay.
So people that are on Social Security income, and that's their sole source, or you know, up to a certain level, they're still allowed to make some money, but up to a certain level, they're no longer going to be paying state income tax on Social Security income.
Wow, okay.
And by the way, a tidbit, there is going to probably be a proposal in the upcoming legislative session to exempt military retirement too.
Oh, wow.
That's another issue that we face. We did not address this in this bill, but I know that there's two senators in particular that are working on that issue, and I wouldn't be surprised if that goes through as well during the upcoming session.
Okay.
I can see both of these being a boon down here. We have so many retirees moving into southern Utah.
Yeah.
That's just another hook for, hey, come live here. Spend your retirement with us.
You know, former Representative John Westwood, you know, he worked significantly on reducing the income tax on Social Security and also on military retirement. And those are things that we've heard over the years that's a criticism of our state.
Yeah.
We could do better. You know, what can we do better? That's a criticism we've had. And it appears that, you know, certainly the Social Security income is taken care of here and military retirement could be right behind
that. That's great. I'm sure that will be well received.
Earned income tax credit. So there is a federal earned income tax credit law. If you qualify that for that in the state of Utah, you will now receive an equivalent amount in state earned income tax.
Yeah.
So that helps the working poor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, that puts more money back in their pocket. Mm-hmm. And a few $100 to those people is an awful lot.
It makes a difference.
So
absolutely. Yeah.
One criticism I've heard there is that a lot of those lower income filers, they have to go and file and they usually don't. Are there resources out there to help them get in and file and get that?
Yeah. That was one really good point, because when you get to the grocery tax credit as well, you know, those are things that resources to find those people. You know, the criticism is, well, from some of the low-income advocates, well, we have a lot of people that just don't file income tax. Mm-hmm. Well, there's another way. In built into the bill, there's another method that they can still get those checks. And so now in the earned income tax credit, you do have to file. But we also put $500,000 into Resource Center to go out and find those people and direct them to the right resources so that they can receive what's coming to them.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah, positive thing.
Not that often you see someone coming to find you to give you your money.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You know, we're from the government, we're here to help you.
Yeah. Actually, it's true this time.
Yeah,
okay.
So, you know, the sales tax. On the other side, you know, we've got all the reductions on the income tax side. We do need to bolster the sales tax side to offset that. And so with that, the income, the growth, the sales tax on groceries. So what's a grocery? So a grocery is when you go to a grocery store like Lens and you purchase groceries. Now, does that count when you buy Tide or you buy Saran Wrap or paper plates? No.
Okay.
It's just on those unprepared foods, non-prepared foods or groceries. So if you're buying milk, if you're buying meat, if you're buying vegetables, you know, you're going to get charged tax. Now, if you go over to the deli in Lens and you buy something that's been prepared, yes, you already pay sales tax on it. If you go to Wendy's or you go to Hermes, you pay sales tax on that.
Right.
Mm.
So it's only on that. So it really essentially was going to do right now at the state tax on groceries, there is some, it's 1.75.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go from 1.75 to 4.85.
Okay.
So with that, we said, okay, there's been a real question mark. Well, is that going to be harmful to the poor?
Right.
We hear that a lot.
Yes.
So it could be. But then there's a counter argument in that all the money that goes to the programs that the poor can use, and there's an awful lot of them out there, a lot of them funnel through Medicaid, those come from sales tax.
Okay.
So there's a pretty good argument that if you taking away the sales tax on food, it actually hurt them more than it's helped. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's the sales tax on food raises about $250 million. A year, but we're giving $130 million back in the form of grocery tax credits. And so up to a certain level, you know, you receive a rebate back. And
is that on once you filed the tax return, if you're under a certain income level?
So there's two components to it. We're going to upfront load it. So those people that qualified last year, that filed income tax and qualified, and that we're aware of that qualified, they will receive a check for part of that money upfront loaded.
Okay.
For example, if they get, you know, the $75, they'll get them, you know, by July 1st, they'll still get the $125 at the end of the year. So we're front loading that with another, you know, about $12 million, something like that, to front load with people. So for example, what does that do to a family?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take your typical family of four, and they get $125, qualify for $125 per person. That's $500.
Okay.
Let's say they get a $500 tax credit on for their groceries. So the tax is going up 3% or 3.1% on their groceries. If you divide that out, it equivalents this. You've got to spend $17,000 on groceries to get $500 worth of sales tax credit. So that means, and I don't know of any family of four that's going to spend $17,000
on groceries. Yeah.
Especially the ones that fall into that income category. So people are ahead. They're coming out ahead on the grocery tax credit.
Okay.
But two things we're doing, we're front loading it with checks going out on July 1st. And then we also, you know, you receive that on the back end when you file. And if you don't file, there's another form that we're reaching out through those other resources to find those people so they can still get that money.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it perfect? No. But is it going to work? Yes.
Okay.
And be beneficial to those poor.
Natalie Gochner pointed out that the $250 million of income being given up from not having groceries tax was only resulting in about a $30 million benefit, too. So it was not terribly efficient the way we were doing it before.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was very non-targeted. You know, tourists weren't paying it. Middle class and upper class families weren't paying it.
Right.
It was... there's a lot falling through the cracks there.
Sure.
Thanks for bringing that up, because their estimate is about 20% of sales tax on food, 20% of the groceries purchased in the state are purchased by tourists.
Okay, yeah.
And they're not being taxed right now.
Right,
so
okay.
So that adds to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, with an economy that has such a big component of tourism to it, that's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, somebody checks into that Airbnb, the first thing they're going to do is go over to Lens or Smith's and, you know, get a few $100 of groceries.
Yeah.
One component of the bill, it's really a minor component of the bill, but We're exempting menstrual products and consumables, feminine hygiene products, mm-hmm. from being have sales tax on them. This is an item that certain members of the legislature pushed for a long time and felt like this appropriate time to go ahead and put that in the bill.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. There are certain exemptions that are repealed. So here's where it kind of comes into, okay, what are some things that maybe we haven't been charging sales tax on, and we probably should.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had people call me and say, "Well, you're charging sales tax on. I'm going to have to pay sales tax on my haircuts mm-hmm. and going to the beauty salon or snow removal." Mm-hmm. That's not the case. Okay, that was the case in 441.
Okay,
that's not the case in this bill.
Okay,
there's a few things that are. You know, for example. Electricity to ski resorts, ski lifts, textbooks purchased by a student, primarily unassisted cleaning of tangible personal property.
Is that dry cleaning? What is that?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Tax on dry cleaning.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're paying those kind of things now.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, car washes, certain type of car washes, but at the same token, as you look at car washes that only some of those machines only accept cash.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Those are going to be exempted out.
Mm, okay.
So vending machines, newspaper and subscriptions, databases, you know, those are things that are, but the list is very small and it's really a small portion of the bill. Where 441 was all about charging taxes on services.
Right.
This bill is very small.
Okay.
A very small portion of the bill. The gas tax does go up.
Okay.
We've got a transportation issue. Quite frankly, the gas tax is a dying tax. This does raise the gas tax 10 cents. It does raise diesel 6 cents. But also with that, the charge to the Department of Transportation is to find an alternative method that's more efficient in taxing and charging a user fee.
Yeah.
You know, so mm-hmm. gas tax is a user fee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I talk to libertarians all the time, you know, they're all about user fees. Well, this is a user fee in its perfect sense. And so, but we do need to, we're using this in two ways. One is to raise money for transportation in order to move money out of the current money that's in transportation, allow that to go to sales tax, allow more income tax money to go back over to public education. So it's a maneuvering of money. But that's what that, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute about education.
Let me ask you this, because one of the things that I've heard as a criticism is, okay, there's a lot of people a lot more people driving electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
Cars are far more efficient, and so they're using less gas. And so mm-hmm. putting a tax on gas and diesel fuel, does that get us where we need to go? Or, you know, like you're talking about, do we need to start looking at some kind of a user fee where people who don't put gas in their cars but are still driving on the roads are participating in that?
You're absolutely right, because we recognize this is not going to get us where mm-hmm. we need to go. It'll be a bridge until we get to that point where we know what that next generation is going to be and
okay.
how we charge user fees.
Okay.
Now there is right now there's a pilot program going on with, you know, non-gas vehicles,
mm-hmm.
you know, electric and natural gas, and
mm-hmm.
looking at, you know, some type of a form that would, because right now you're right, and anybody that owns an electric vehicle or a CNG vehicle
mm-hmm.
is not paying their fair share
mm-hmm.
to the roads,
mm-hmm.
and so that needs to be addressed, and so that will be addressed with this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of different alternatives. They're looking at HOV lanes and how to do that, some type of a different type of user fee, you know,
okay.
in order to make that work. There's some services, you know, here again, some services, pet boarding, pet grooming, but here, very small stuff,
uh-huh.
Ambulance services, motor vehicle towing, parking lots and garages. There again, if they only accept cash, then that won't be the case.
Okay.
You know, so there's some very small things. And for streaming, you know,
uh-huh.
we used to go buy CDs
right.
and
yeah.
or 8-tracks. Or
I know, depending on your, yeah. Okay, before.
Yeah.
And some people still into records.
Yeah, and, you know, I do remember 45s too. So, you know, we used to purchase those and pay
yeah.
sales tax on them. We don't anymore, and so that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Uber and Lyft, we charge sales tax on taxis. We don't own Uber and Lyft.
Okay.
So that'll be charged. But here again, that's a small portion of the bill,
right.
very small portion.
Okay.
It's not anything close to what 441 and all these things that you're hearing about, like I say, you know, I'm hearing, you know, from some people that feel that they're being told by people that are trying to get people to sign the referendum that you're going to be charged a sales tax on this and that. That's not the case. That's just not true. So unfortunately, those are where some really inaccurate information is out there.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can correct that.
That's our goal. And I just want to make the point, don't get your information from Facebook, people. It hasn't been vetted.
It's where information goes to die.
Right.
Yeah, and there's some good resources out there. And quite frankly, I don't banter on Facebook. I just don't go on and respond on Facebook. And I'd spend all day long doing it.
Yeah.
Because there's
yeah.
so much inaccurate information
yes.
out there. But I feel bad when somebody comes in and talks to me and says, hey, I signed that referendum, and what did I really sign?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, what did they tell you? And so they go through the things, and I said, well, that was wrong. That was wrong. That was wrong. And that was inaccurate. So, you know, then they feel bad. Well, how do I get my name taken off?
Yeah.
You know, that's the next question.
Yeah.
So let's talk about public education for a second. So I mentioned that we have this constitutional amendment, and if you kind of visualize this line, and then on this side is income tax, and that all goes to education. Mm-hmm. We do have this silo over here. It's higher education, and it's a $1 billion business that money goes to fund higher education. Used to be all that came from sales tax.
Uh-huh.
Now, because of the additional constitutional amendment, we do allow income tax to go over into higher education. So what we've been doing over the last 10 to 15 years is, as we had need for sales tax money because we were short, we would pull sales tax money out of higher education, backfill it with income tax, and we're up to the point now that we're almost out of cap space.
Yeah.
So what this bill does is, with the money that we've increased on the sales tax side, we're putting that back in, and so that money is going back over to the sales tax side. And this is ongoing money. It's around $700 million.
Okay.
It's going back over to the public ed side.
Okay.
So, yes, we cut income tax on the public ed side going forward. Now, we do know that because of our growth rate and what's going on with the economy, we're going to get a lot of that back. But we also backfilled with that income tax money that was over in higher ed back to public ed. So essentially, by doing that, we've held them harmless.
Okay.
Now, we put over $1 billion of new money, ongoing money, into public ed in the last 4 years.
Wow.
And we'll continue to do that. In fact, the legislature and executive appropriations, we all are already voted to include the $50 million going toward public ed growth, student growth, new student. Every year it costs us between $30 and $50 million a year just to cover new students coming into the system. And that's different than other states. Other states are losing students.
Right.
We're gaining students.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're doing that up front in the base budget. So that will be passed in the first couple of days of the session.
Okay.
So, you know, that's an indication the legislature wanted to send that message that, yes, we are going to take care of public education. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially what the bill does. You know, if you start looking at it in the numbers, you know, you have money going up on the sales tax side and going down on the income tax side, but the net effect is a huge tax cut.
Okay.
Well, it's good to get that visualization of these, you know, buckets of money and being able to move stuff around to be flexible and try and, you know, do right by everybody. It's certainly a challenge. You know, you're certainly not going to have the income tax requirement for education be changed anytime soon.
So there's a couple of things out there. I see people that say, well, look at all this long list of things that the state is helping to fund. And usually that list is things like that come from what we call BEDL, which is the committee, Business Economic Development and Labor Committee. And they oversee a lot of things. For example, they oversee a museum in Kickapoo. They'll actually take, you know, we'll look at, you know, some theater money in Logan. We'll look at Shakespeare Festival, Utah Summer Games, those things. When you add that up, it's pixie dust.
Yeah.
It's really small amounts. But it's money that, you know, it's allocated to help some of those organizations that drive economic development in their own communities. Those are things, and that's a criticism. Now, there is one criticism out there, and I've just recently seen, that talks about a large surplus that the University of Utah is sitting on. And quite frankly, I think there is a little bit to that, and I've got some staff people looking into that right now.
Okay.
And if there's something there, then and we need to make some adjustments, then we will.
Okay.
But I just can't speak confidently that that does exist.
Okay.
And then how it exists and why it's there, and you know, because here again, the information that was sent to me didn't have all the facts contained in it. So
yeah.
I've got some people with their staff and you know, working on that. And we'll look into it, quite frankly. And I appreciate anytime people can bring those kind of things up, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But just because somebody says it's true doesn't always mean it's true.
And I've seen that a lot on, you know, different social media, and someone will just say something and they don't cite a source, they don't cite where their information came from, and it's just somebody saying something. But people latch on to that, you know, and it creates stress and it creates confusion and. Anyway.
Recently, there was a Facebook post on the Iron County Cedar City website, and it had 17 items were listed on there. And I read through them, and I realized that you know the author of that was really off base because most of them were inaccurate, and some of them were just totally false.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and I kind of broke my cardinal rule of getting on Facebook and responding, but I did. I responded and pointed out each one of those individual items, and I answered those questions and pointed out which ones are false, which ones are inaccurate, and here's why.
Uh-huh.
And you get that a lot of times on Facebook because somebody will grab onto something somebody says, and you know, then they'll transfer it around, share it, and before long, it even gets distorted from what the original version was. So.
But back in the 90s, everyone said, oh, the promises in the internet is everyone gets to speak equally. And now we're realizing, oh, crap, everyone gets to speak equally.
Yeah.
You know, social media is an awesome thing. You know, it allows you to do an awful lot of things, a lot of good things.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But it certainly allows some people to have a platform that they can say things that either are just off base or just they're throwing stuff out there.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, somebody reading that takes up his gospel and believes
right.
it. Yeah. So anyway, I just caution people, and I appreciate you saying that. You know, don't get your information from Facebook. There's an awful lot of other really good sources, and I would recommend. And quite frankly, I'm open to people calling and visiting with me. I get people coming to the store all the time. They ask me questions, and I'm certainly open to that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate your availability and your time here. I had a bunch of questions, but I think you've pretty much taken us through everything. But tell us one more time where to go to access the correct information.
So you can go to the Utah State Legislative website, le.utah.gov, or you can just even go to the Utah State website and just type in tax reform, or if you just want to Google Utah tax reform, it'll take you to the summary. You can go to the Utah Senate website, and it'll find it. I would recommend that you look up the Utah Taxpayers Association and look at their summary.
That was a good article. Yeah. Okay, excellent. Well, we sure appreciate your time. Anything else we need to know or understand before we let you get back to your day?
I caution people, and, you know, what I'm trying to do is allow you to have the information that you need to know what's in the bill, what's accurately in the bill, and then you can make a decision on whether you want a referendum. You do need to be careful, though, and let me just point out that if there was enough signatures to put the referendum on the ballot, number one is those payments to those families would not go out in 2020. And the money that you're getting back now in your withholdings would stop. You know, it would go revert back to the previous. So there's some things that would happen if that was to get on the ballot. And that, quite frankly, who knows? I'm fine with that. If the public wants to put it on the ballot,
if the people speak, then the people speak.
But
another thing I think is important to put out there is if that referendum does get on the ballot, basically we're back to where we started and we're about to go off a cliff. Like you were saying earlier, not because we don't have enough revenue coming in, but because constitutionally the legislature is prohibited from spending it in certain ways. So then, you know, you kind of go back to the drawing board.
Quite frankly, we'd be fine. We'd figure it out.
Okay.
You know, we'd go back and figure it out. But this is a much better path for the citizens of the state to let this tax cut go through.
Okay. Well, that's great. You have anything else?
No, I just appreciate you took the time to explain it all out because there's a lot of moving parts to keep track of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. We've had Senator Evan Vickers on. This has been Color Country Politics. Start of season 3. We'll see you next time.
You
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.